To order. And today, we have two bills and public hearing on Senate Bill 489. Okay. Senator Brown. Twice in one day, this is a great thing. I didn't bring you lunch either. Sorry.
Okay, I raided the Senate lounge.
Oh, good.
I brought a cookbook, though.
She can. All right.
If it helps, I never did get breakfast. So.
You didn't?
It's one of those days.
Not yet. Found that in the lunch.
We are so happy to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so delighted to be here. I really appreciate your time and energy, and I certainly appreciate the Joint Committee's sponsorship of the bill. For the record, I'm State Senator Kate Brown. I represent Senate District 21, which encompasses a little bit of Northeast Portland, a lot of Southeast Portland, and the city of Milwaukee. I'm so lucky to have both the Multnomah and Clackamas counties in my Senate district. I wish I could tell you, and I'm here in support of Senate Bill 489. I wish I could tell you I have this great personal story about why I'm bringing you this bill, but I don't. Frankly, I was at, as most of you know, I was former chair of Council of States Governance West, and have spent a lot of time over the last several years going to our regional meetings. I find them to be very helpful. And one of the public policy issues that I learned about in one of those meetings was this particular bill. And the state of Washington passed this bill, or some form of it, several years ago. I took this issue and decided to introduce it last session. I know the committee was able to work it, but we weren't able to reach resolution. So I think it's really, frankly, just good public policy. The bill does a couple of things. It authorizes the Office of Emergency Management to collect funds for grants to state agencies, school districts, and local governments. More importantly, the bill also provides that the Office of Emergency Management will develop guidelines, create, and operate a first responder building mapping system. And that information shall be made available to both law enforcement and fire departments. I guess what I would say to you is that mapping buildings allows first responders to quickly locate entrances and exits in cases of emergencies, locate power lines, evacuate and secure the building. There are basically three circumstances under which the bill is applicable. It would be in disasters. Obviously, folks are aware of what that might entail, crimes, and, of course, in instances of terrorism. I'm going to talk for a minute about the Washington example. In the state of Washington, in funding their proposal, they frankly went to the federal government, and the federal government provided the backbone for the administration of the program. They also provided, they did it in a graduated way. They also provided some state dollars, about $3 million the first biennium, and actually the first year, and another couple of million the second year, to gradually include the school district. So they started with the high schools and then moved on to elementary and middle schools. And I just want to share with you a little bit about the Washington program. It's currently in full swing. It's been an effective tool for law enforcement, particularly during a shooting incident where a student entered a Spokane high school with a gun. And in this incident, the student barricaded himself in a chemistry lab with a pistol. And first responders were able to use, and they call it in Washington, the critical incident planning and mapping system. They used it to quickly shut off the gas lines, locate an alternative entrance to the barricaded room, and clear the building of some 2,000 students and staff. So I can provide you with more information about that particular incident, which happened a couple of years ago. But obviously, the mapping system enabled law enforcement to limit casualties and limit further injuries in that particular incident. So I have no particular investment over the wording of the bill. If you all think it needs to be changed, we need to go a different route. In Washington, the sheriffs and the police chiefs implement the program. And this bill, the Office of Emergency Management does that. If you think someone else should do it, please feel free to work it. I just think it's a really good pop-up policy for this state. So I'm happy to answer any questions, and I really appreciate your time and energy.
Senator Johnson, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Senator Brown, for bringing us, I think, a really good idea. The question that I have about it is that in other hearings, we're listening to testimony about the layering of data collection in different places. the Department of Administrative Services is undertaking a large data gathering that would deal with real property as well as wetland delineations at some point. You've got the Department of Revenue with data gathering. Is all I'd like to make sure is that if this bill is successful, that at some point we direct a pathway to get this data amalgamated in all of the other data that's being collected in some useful way so that you get the maximum bang for the data collected. And I certainly think it's a good idea. I just want to make sure that there's at least a tip of the hat acknowledgement to the fact that all this other information is being collected, not to this level of detail where you're trying to see, you know, where the locker rooms are in a high school, but we do have all this other data collection going on.
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, I agree. I think we need to coordinate the information that's available. I also think, though, in this particular type of information, who has access to the data is critically important. And so one is making sure that there's an exemption from the public record statute so that, I was going to say every Tom, Dick, and Harry, but every Jane, Louisa, and you get the idea, don't have access to the information is critically important. And I also think that also holds true in terms of gathering, coordinating the information that we have, is that some of this is confidential. So.
Followed, Madam Chair. That actually, that issue that you've raised is becoming an impediment to gathering the more macro data at both the Department of Administrative Services and the Department of Revenue. Counties are asserting that there's proprietary information. Counties are asserting that this is a revenue source for them and throwing up barriers to getting the data collected. We're going to have issues with confidentiality here. And, colleagues, at some point, that's probably a policy question that we need to get resolved. Otherwise, we're out spending tons of money gathering data that is spotty data or has it just doesn't seem to be completely efficacious if there are resistance to providing the material. Now, I'm very sympathetic to the fact that at the Department of Revenue and the DAS project, you don't want, say, police officers' home addresses listed on it. I'm very sympathetic to that, as I am sympathetic to the fact that there's confidential and proprietary data here. But I think we've got to collectively have a conversation about what do we include in these big databases, how do we restrict access to them to authorized persons. And I just raise it as an issue. I'm perfectly supportive of the bill. I think the bill ought to go forward. But somewhere out there begs a larger conversation about data collection and manipulation and access.
Okay. Senator Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to remind you, those of you who went with us to Umatilla, that the police there already have this available in their police cars. And part of that is the sophistication level of their communication systems. Also, there probably needs to be some backup plan in case you would have some failure in that technology at the same time that you needed to be looking at the layout and of a building in order to get into. But I think that just the history that we've had so far in this country with schools, I think it would be a very, very good idea for us to have it in Oregon.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And that, I do believe, is one of the reasons why the federal government assisted with funding in the state of Washington was because of the Hanford nuclear reservation was included in the building information mapping system. So, but I agree, Senator Berger, that the schools are one of the most critical components of this. In Washington, it cost $3 million in 2003 to map each of Washington's more than 400 high schools. So I truly believe that this is within the realm of fiscal possibility for this legislature. I also wanted the committee to know that there are several other states moving in this direction, Arizona, Nevada, Kentucky, Louisiana, Michigan and Colorado are all either looking at similar systems or moving in this direction. So, thank you very much.
More questions?
I'm fine. I want to make a comment when we're done before she leaves, if I could.
Before she leaves?
Before she leaves where she's sitting.
Okay. Well, then would you allow Senator George to go with his question first?
Oh, yes.
Senator, I was just looking at the bill, and I don't see a problem with the question I'm going to ask and what you will glean from what I'm going to tell you. Last year I asked ODOT for a map, and they said, well, we couldn't get you the map. And so somebody told me about a private contractor in Oregon City, and I contacted them. And, of course, they're the primary contractor that delivers all of this GIS-based data to Tualatin Valley Fire Department. Do we have anybody here from Tualatin Valley? Do we? I think it might be very informative. Could you come on up? Now, correct me if I'm describing this
incorrectly.
Not that like me on the spot.
You raised your hand in this place.
That's your problem.
Would you please state your name for the record?
I will. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Alec Jensen. I'm the executive officer for Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue. And I probably should tell you that our response aid program, our mapping program, is not a program that I manage or have a lot to do with. But I'll take my best shot at answering your question.
Let me go ahead if we could, Madam Co-Chair. I'll describe it, and he can correct me if I didn't understand right. My understanding is that this company is the one that does the work for them. I got a chance to look at it. I'm going to bring each one of you a video of the interview that I did with the individual who is one of the engineers inside of that. Organization. They deliver this data much cheaper than anybody can provide it on their own. And it's one of these things that I'm thinking, why would we do the DMV computer fiasco all over again when I have somebody who can deliver something that'll work? They deliver it loaded, if I understand, when you guys, that they basically update it, keep it in the computers at the fire department. They do it all over the nation. In fact, I believe there are project that's probably completed in Arizona for the state of Arizona at much less cost than what the state had come up with as an estimate. And so I hope, now, are you familiar at all with that operation?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator George, I'm familiar to the point that I can confirm what you're telling us, indeed, yeah,
okay.
That's an accurate reflection of our experience.
I was amazed, if I could continue, this is more like a statement now, it's more like testimony, what I saw was the most impressive detail quickly and easily available on their computers inside of the fire trucks to where those people knew exactly what they were getting into as they went there. I did not believe that it could be presented any better than what we saw there. So I guess back to Senator Brown again, I don't see anything that would keep us from possibly saying we may need to look at providers who can deliver this stuff for the state, us be the primary contractor for the purchase of it. There's no use in reinventing the wheel. Would you agree to something like that?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator George, however you think, you are the certified smart people in this arena, however you think the bill ought to be implemented, I'm willing to go along with. So.
Okay. Well, I will request as soon as we leave here that those videos be duplicated.
Could you? Yeah, because my Netflix is at home and I am out of movies.
am I your friend?
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay, Rep. Krieger, if you want the last word, there's somebody else has popped in. Would you like your word now?
You can close the whole hearing on that whole bill, and I still want to.
Okay. Rep. Schaffler.
Yeah, okay, you got the system in place. Something bad happens, law enforcement needs this information. What's the protocol in your fire district for the use and distribution of this information? And if something bad happens, I'm sure you don't sit around a street corner going, well, this is proprietary, we're not sharing it with the SWAT team. How do you deal with this? What's the protocol here?
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Schaffler, this actually, I'm going to describe what I recall. This actually was an issue was the proprietary nature of this, and there was some debate internally. But if my memory serves me correctly, we landed on a place where we actually do share that response aid information, that mapping information, with other appropriate agencies. As you know, we serve 11 different jurisdictions, and it would be pretty counterproductive for us not to cooperate with our law enforcement partners.
Thank you very much.
Representative Krieger.
Has nothing to do with this subject. You better close the
hearing. Oh, okay.
Wait, excuse me.
Madam Chair.
I know.
Don't go anywhere.
Oh.
I didn't actually finish that story. Well, yes, it's kind of a question. Here's what happened. When I talked to the gentleman, he tells me that almost 100% of the data that he has comes from agency, okay? And so they have their security level built in. The information that he got for me about these maps was actually from ODOT. And he said ODOT was amazingly cooperative in providing this information because they contract back to buy it from them. So what he basically does, takes the information, organizes it, and then puts it out. So I would imagine, since the source of the information was non-proprietary, in other words, it was the state, the only thing, the question would be the organization of it. Can you tell us whether, apparently you found a way to share it?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator George, now we're getting outside my comfort
okay.
zone. What I will tell you is that there's a myriad of sources for the information. Some of it comes from the actual property owner, the business owner, but there's a tremendous amount of effort that goes into it from the standpoint of our engine companies and our deputy fire marshals who go out and actually engage in mapping the occupancy, identifying the hazards, and you know those sorts of things. The balance of that, I'm afraid, it's outside my okay. comfort zone.
Okay. Thank you, Rep. Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Senator Brown. I'm glad you're on top of this.
Thank you.
And Mr. Johnson, do you have is the cost of your system within your realm?
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Nelson, it is. Notwithstanding staff time, which has been tremendous, and this has been, you know, we working with the company in Oregon City has been a reference. We actually are proud of the fact that we've pioneered some of this in the region. We're into this for over $1 million in contract work to date.
And excuse me, follow up, mm-hmm. Madam Chair. And how long has this been in the process? I'm assuming you've refined it as you've gone forward.
Yes, ma'am, Madam Chair, Representative Nelson. I'm going to take a guess and say that we've been into this for about 3 or 4 years now.
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Nelson, if I may, I just wanted to point out on page 2 of the bill, section 3, sub 3, provides that if school districts or local agencies have already gotten building mapping software, they can continue to use their own unless, of course, the funds were provided by the state agency, in which case they got to use our system, our database.
That's good to know.
So thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. We have 2 more people signed up to testify.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank
if I may excuse,
much.
I've got another committee to go to.
You may be excused.
Thank
and we
you.
We promise not to totally disembowel your
can bill. Can I interrupt real quick?
Okay.
Oh, my gosh.
this has nothing to do with the bill, but okay. Our coastal caucus was not covered by any type of official recording, and you wisely this morning invited Senator Brown to it and all the rest of the House members. And we were having a presentation. You got to listen to this. We had a presentation from Scott Reed regarding the value of 4-H. What has that got to do? Well, 4-H, of course, 100,000 kids in the state. Senator Brown and I and Schaffler and Cruz have been working on dependency cases and foster care. And her question was, what is the connection and what are we doing between the connection of foster care and these kids in these homes and 4-H? Guess what? So now, because one question was asked to a senator who was in a meeting she didn't have to be at, Scott Reed's face got big, his eyes got big, and he was writing down, and you're going to see foster kids now have access to 4-H programs because somebody was at a meeting she didn't have to be at. And I think I appreciate her time for being there. And there was no way to get this out because our meetings aren't recorded. So I just want to make sure you were given you know, your accolades, because that is going to mean something to kids in the future.
Thank you, Representative Krieger, and I was there because my good Senator Berger invited me. So,
and we were really happy to have you there. I know you had to change your schedule and only have blueberries for breakfast, but
I got more for breakfast. Don't worry.
Thank you very much. Okay. So next we'll have Ken Armstrong, Oregon Fire Chiefs. And Bob Livingston from Portland Fire, Oregon State Firefighter. Chiefs and fighters.
Arm in arm.
Arm in arm.
Sometimes.
On the big issues, we're right here together.
Okay.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, Ken Armstrong, and I'm here representing the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association. A couple of the issues that I wanted to raise have really already been touched on, and that is that this is a good concept. This is a good direction in which to be going. There's an awful lot in this bill that appears is going to require considerable administrative rule development to kind of flesh some of this stuff out. One of the issues that Mr. Jensen raised was the cost of the system that Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue has developed. And then Senator Brown commented that under Section 3, Sub 3, that there is a provision to allow those existing systems to be used unless the state, of course, kicks in the money. I think that there could be some further discussion to make sure that we have clarified that as the state sets up a system, that the system that is compatible with that is in fact those that have had a lot of money invested in it already, and that we don't leave up to some degree of chance that there might be an investment of over $1 million that might not be compatible with whatever the state comes up with. And so I would suggest that it might be worth, before this bill moves forward onto the floor, that it might be worth a conversation that would include the State Fire Marshal's Office, representative of that organization is here in the room, some of the larger jurisdictions and some of the smaller jurisdictions that are going to have to, it appears, front end some of the dollars to get the mapping going and then be able to get prospectively reimbursed essentially through those grants from the state. There's just a couple of minor issues like that I think might need to be kicked around and talked about before the bill is actually ready to go out and get passed. But I think by and large the concept is a very good one, and we want to do anything that we can to help keep the thing moving forward.
Great. Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Bob Livingston representing the Oregon State Firefighters Council. We certainly want to thank Senator Brown for bringing this to the attention of this committee. I agree with my colleague, Mr. Armstrong. We think the time has come for this to be available to public safety officers. We're in the 21st century. Technology advancements have allowed for us to be able to gather additional information. We think this is a good tool in the toolbox. I think at the same time, I think Madam Co-Chair was right on the money with respect that I must caution the group that you will never be able to replace a good working knowledge, whether it's the police officer on the beat that knows his neighborhood or the firefighter that knows his local firehouse and the buildings that are in this, because indeed, particularly during times of storms and that, technology advancements sometimes go down. And so my experience with similar issues with this is that sometimes technology does fail. Having said that, it's also why we think this is an important bill. From personal experience, a couple of stories that I'd just like to put on the record, it has been extremely frustrating that at times when buildings either change or they get renovated and those types of things, and you have either a medical emergency, a baby not breathing, or something like that, as a first responder, there's nothing more frustrating than even though you know the address at a large complex because they've done a renovation and all that, now all of a sudden it's in an area that it's named something entirely different. We think this technology can help mitigate that, and truly indeed there are times when seconds do save lives, and having the technology available, clearly we see it in the military, whether it's an F-16 fire fire pilot or a the F-22. I saw a recent show on that where they actually know where the enemy is far before they even know it, and it's already over. I think I would use the analogy that this could be available for public safety officers if it's used right. I think so. There needs to be some details worked out, particularly as there's changes in architecture, if they change the building. There needs to be provisions put into administrative rules, Mr. Armstrong alluded to, that we assure that the data, it's going to be one of those ongoing projects that continually needs to be upgraded as buildings change and those kind of things. The other thing, just another example that I can give you at a recent incident, and fortunately it turned out to be a false alarm, but there was reports of a hostage situation at the Oregon School for the Deaf. And I happened to actually be involved in that particular incident, and there was no information, no electronic information as far as where the building layouts were. The only thing that we had was that out of the goodness of a firefighter from probably about 15, 20 years ago had actually done a hand drawing of the layout of that. The incident command post used that. It helped with the officers from a tactical standpoint do what they needed to do to try to make sure that the kids were evacuated and that they also were doing clearing. So unfortunately, even though we're in the 21st century and the technology's out there, something like this is needed, and we appreciate the efforts once again of this legislature to look at that. It's a tool in the toolbox. Nothing's ever going to replace the men and women out on the streets and to do that in good, you know, human intelligence, but it is a valuable tool that I think, and maybe I'm speaking out of turn here, that throughout the years, I'm sure if Representative Krieger would have had something like this during his tenure, it would have been helpful, I would assume, too. So let's use it. Let's move this bill forward and work out the details and make sure we get to the 21st century. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Johnson?
Several comments. They did do it during Trooper Krieger's time. It was just on stone tablets.
Alcohol.
A couple of things in your comments that I want to amplify and recommend. The first one is you have hit on, I think, the most important salient piece in this whole bill, and that's the fact that this is perishable data. And if it is not kept up, it becomes even more dangerous than if it didn't exist at all. And I think that in contemplating how much this is going to cost, who's responsible for maintaining it to a degree that it's useful to first responders is terribly important. The other thing, when you were talking about F-15s, caused me to think about, in the bill language, there's a line that says, no one hazards. It might be very useful to have, if you're going to put together a working group or somebody, think about it. It also might be useful to have somebody report on the availability of helicopter landing sites. I was involved in a project in downtown Portland to look at rooftops to see what debris, what antennas, what impediments to landing helicopters on the top of buildings might exist. And it certainly seems to me to be useful to, in addition to the plan of the building, to know what obstructions might make it possible or impossible for a helicopter to land if they had to take out injured people or bring in additional equipment or peace officers or whatever. But that might be a good thing to have.
Thank you. Good comments. Sounds like a work group is forming right now.
So, yes, we did that.
Would you like to do that and work together with Senator Brown's office, too, and Fire Marshal, and bring us back as soon as you can get something together quickly, and with the language that would make everybody happy and we can move this thing forward?
We'd be happy to do that. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Yeah. And one thing I wanted to say is what Senator Johnson brought up, landing, available landing and stuff like that. In some cases in the rural areas, it's a field or whatever, but it'd be nice to know, I'm not trying to add to your work, but some places where you can use a building that exists, a barn, that we're going to use to get somebody out of, need to get somebody quickly out of and land somewhere, just so they know if there's, you know, livestock there regularly, or that when they blow the gravel out towards things that it's either a good landing spot, you know, a viable one, or maybe your best to land, clear the highway and land there. That kind of stuff. I know it's, I don't know how fine-tuned it you make it, but
it's called rotor wash.
The Northwest Rotorcraft Association might be of assistance. They have lots of pictures, and they might be a useful source.
Yes.
Madam
Senator Burchett.
Chair, I just wondered if Senator George might not have some suggestions as someone else that might want to join that group because he's interested in the in the looking at the
absolutely
and so forth.
Well, can you all
nice to have in that
yeah,
report.
Can you all work together toward a good and as soon as possible? We've been given that sign from this, mostly on the Senate side, so maybe you guys over there can you can show how fast this can happen to finish our, because our deadlines are coming up. So,
Madam Coach, I would be happy to. We'll work with Mr. Keller to make sure that we get our people and some of the other organizations that have been talked about pulled together.
And as soon as you're ready to schedule, we'll put her back on. So, okay.
Sounds great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, is there any more to be said on, I think, anybody in the audience who didn't sign up and wants to speak? Then I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 489 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2624. And, but where is he? Representative Esquivel? Representative Esquivel, we're ready to hear you. Okay. And Representative Burley, welcome
to
my committee.
Thank you.
And actually, we're here just for support on an issue here that I'm Representative Esquivel, District 6, Medford, and we'd like to call Andy Anderson up to the microphone with us, if he would.
Okay, please. I'm going to have the administrator read the bill for us first, too. Sure. But come on up as we're waiting.
House Bill 2624 authorizes the governing body of specified cities with a population of at least 50,000 to submit requests that the governor declare an emergency directly to their Office of Emergency Management rather than submitting the request through the county.
Okay. Now, please proceed.
Hey, let me introduce myself. My name is Andy Anderson. I'm the city manager of Bend. At one time, I was the city manager of Medford as well, so no sell from that from those days. I send apologies from our city council mayor who were unable to come to testify today, and that this bill is theirs, and because they have full-time jobs, they were unable to break away on a short notice. This bill was introduced as an alternative for cities in the process of requesting an emergency be declared by the state on the city's behalf. The legislation was requested by our city council, Bend's, after experiencing flooding conditions in Bend in late 2005, early 2006. Over about a four-day period, we had an excessive amount of rainfall for us. In fact, one of the days, we had 6 inches straight. In a community that gets 11 inches in a whole year, you can imagine what that did to our storm drain facilities. And if any of you have been to Bend, you know that there's railroad underpasses as well as a parkway underpass on our east side of our downtown. And all those are prone to flooding. They flooded pretty mightily during this storm period. And transportation was very, very difficult back and forth. There was some property damage, but no life of loss was suffered. When it came to the point where, and we worked with our county emergency preparedness folks all along, and in fact, emergencies in Bend outside of fires don't normally occur. We've had two floods in the institutional memory of the staff that works for the city of Bend, about 25 years apart. And what this points up to us, though, is that when we got to the point where we were prepared to send the information forward to the state, we couldn't find a county commissioner. So what we've suggested in this legislation is that the city be allowed somehow to declare it itself. There are analogous situations to this. The statutes currently allow, if the governor's not available, for the Secretary of State to stand in the governor's stead. Also, I think the state treasurer is in that chain of command. Let me tell you about the emergencies we're very familiar with in Bend, and that's fires. We have fires on a regular basis over there. So the way it's organized through the fire chiefs in the county. amongst themselves, they name a county chief for a duration, and then it's replaced by another chief. It's on a rotation basis. And that person is the one authorized to ask the state fire marshal to invoke emergency programs at the state level. And the way that works, usually these firefighters are out in the hinterlands, sometimes out of communication, and they have a chain of command they go down to. And I think in the worst case, they went down 9 people till they finally found a fire chief to declare the emergency. It works very well. What we need in city situation, in case this occurs again, where someone may be indisposed, a system and a chain of command. The other thing is that we put 50,000 population in there as a guess. We don't care if anyone amends that to a different population size. It's just that Ben's over 50. And we put that in there as well as Medford. And further, since we've introduced the bill and just outside in the hallway, we've had occasion to discuss some issues with a representative of the Association of Counties. And we'll probably come back with some amendments to set up what I just described, a chain of command so we can find somebody if something really bad happens. As I said, in Bend, we don't usually see anything outside of fires, but we do have perhaps a possibility of an earthquake. South Sister has a bulge on its side that's growing, being measured by Oregon State University folks. So we do have that possibility. If that were to happen, we would need some means to communicate to the state without having to find one or two persons to hold it up. And we think we can probably correct this with some amendments to this bill.
Senator George?
You all are very much aware of the fact that we have counties who may almost virtually end being a county. And I was thinking about what about some language that would provide that if a not appropriate person was available from the county, whatever the circumstances, that the city would then have the authority after checking to see if there was to then go ahead and notify.
That's what I envisioned. Wherever it was located, if you run out of county people to contact, it would fall back to whatever city where the emergency was occurring.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Yes?
Sal Esquivel, Representative District 6, Medford. We discussed that very issue, Senator, and we need to have a chain of command where you take your commissioners, then you take your public works, your fire marshal, your sheriff, and then if you go to from 1 to 4 or whatever, then you need to spin off and go to the state. But we need to have some sort of a structure, which is not in place now, but that's what we're going to massage this bill to make counties and cities understand that there will be a structure in place, and we need to have these in place in order for these emergencies to happen. Just because you can't get hold of a county commissioner and you can't get help, that's not acceptable.
And I want to say our county commissioners are wonderful people. I mean, they just like everyone else.
But they're slippery. They get away.
You couldn't get across town. They were bothered by that transportation difficulty. In fact, we couldn't even find our mayor. I found him on his cell phone. Fortunately, he was on the right side of the floodwaters, and we got him down to City Hall to sign ours. So it's an issue all over the place. We did talk to our county about this bill before, and they didn't want to take a position. The sheriff said he's in favor of it. So whatever you do with that.
Senator Johnson?
If it's a chain of command issue, and you can get that worked out with the cities and the counties, wouldn't this be applicable to any town? I mean, I think it's good policy to have a clearly articulate chain of command, and I don't know why you do. We've been talking in other venues about the necessity in emergencies to have a command and control structure. And I would hate to have two parallel universes. If you're these guys, you do this kind of command and control. If you're these guys, you do this kind of command and control. If this is a command and control problem, let's set the protocol and have it applicable to Bend as well as Scappoose or Vernonia or any other little city that might have an emergency that would isolate it even more than a metropolis the size of my homeland, Bend.
I'll answer that. Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, we agree, and that's one of the things I brought up. Why didn't we pick out 25,000 or why didn't we pick out 5,000, you know? I don't think that really needs to be part of the criteria. I think it's any incorporated municipality within the state of Oregon should be eligible for this. But I think on the commissioner part, evidently there's some reluctance in some counties in order to establish a specific rollout of procedures. So I think that's what we need to do is clean this thing up, get procedures established, and let municipalities and counties work towards at least a checkoff list.
Rep. Nelson.
Yes, thank you. Madam Chair, Representative Esquivel, and Representative Burley, and Mr. Anderson, thank you for being here and concerned about this issue. I have a question from the, I guess, another side in that in the state, you have individuals who represent every 57,000 population, and that was kind of interesting to me that yet they're not included in this anywhere that, you know, would have a little bit of clout in helping get an emergency declared. And then I'm further mindful that you might think is an emergency in your area, the governor might not agree. And I don't see anything in this bill that supersedes or overrides his judgment. And I wonder what you would do in that case.
Are you asking me?
Any of you. The smartest one there.
Well, that
is me. I'm going to step down. Go ahead, Mr. Anderson.
Madam Chair, I thought you wanted the cutest one to answer.
And the baldest one to answer. In our instance, when we did contact the state, what an emergency wasn't declared because there wasn't enough. And I've done this, let's see, I've been a city manager in five different places, and I've done this, this is the third time. And all three times we submitted data, and it wasn't enough to declare an emergency. It's just, you have to communicate back and forth to the state, and it's up to their judgment. And I think it's federal regulations they follow, if I'm correct, on what constitutes an emergency. Unless the state of Oregon has something different. And all instances I've done it, we got all the information up there, and it wasn't an emergency under the criteria, so it wasn't declared.
Follow up, Madam Chair. If we could, I think probably our committee administrator knows the answer. We were discussing this earlier. We were talking about this bill, that we might know what does constitute an emergency.
Well, right now, to declare an emergency, the governor would go to the ORS statutes, and that'd be 401.025(3), and it's a rather lengthy one that I can't recite from memory.
And basically, though, it says what?
It's floods, any catastrophic event, earthquakes, volcanoes erupting, those sorts of things.
So follow up. Madam Chair, we have great concern because, as you know, tomorrow our task force is going to be working on this issue, as I mentioned earlier in the week to you guys. And I guess we need to know the why, what you thought was an emergency wasn't, because this greatly concerns us. I know recently in the floods in Tillamook and so forth, it wasn't initially thought to be that critical by our governor, but a two-thirds vote of the legislature would have probably said, yes, it is, and let's go forth. So I'm just wondering if...
If I remember the criteria, it's a certain amount of property damage, and you have to reach a threshold before it is declared an emergency. It has to be of a magnitude, and there's a dollar value in there, and the loss of life, I think, is factored in, too.
Mm-hmm.
You can have some interesting floods that I've experienced that aren't emergencies on a state basis.
So follow up, Madam Chair. So the reason your claims were previously denied was for what reason? So
we didn't have enough dollar value in the loss. In any
as
instance,
evaluated by whom?
The estimates.
It doesn't say
made.
Anywhere in here. Who?
We made the estimates ourselves
and so
at the local level.
But Madam Chair, now follow up, but I'm just saying who at the state level under what authority made the decision that it wasn't, and how did they go about it? There's nothing anywhere that I can find specifies how they determine this.
or
I'm sure
who
they
determines
have it in
it?
Their plans, and it probably the State Office of Emergency Management would cover it and recommend to the governor what to do.
Cowan, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really need to step in here at this point. I've been working in emergency management and preparedness as a county commissioner for 12 years, and there certainly are guidelines and statutes. The difference that I think I'm hearing from this conversation is what constitutes a state of an emergency that a locality needs to deal with may not be the same as a disaster declaration. And that's the problem that you have here, is that you need to differentiate between, of course there's a state of emergency. If you have a flood situation that's cutting you off from parts of the city, you have an issue to deal with and people that need assistance. Whether or not that qualifies for what is actually a federal designation, disaster designation, is very carefully laid out according to, as you have correctly stated, the amount of property damage, extent that's involved, which is the reason that I find grave concern with this particular piece of legislation. That is where I think it's important to have the coordination throughout the structure of county emergency management, and that relationship is why we need to communicate well between city governments, county-level emergency response, and that chain of command that's outlined for the request to the governor for a disaster declaration, which then leaves us in line to get things like National Guard assistance and federal government assistance. Actually, the disaster designation is more focused on the recovery end of a emergency than it is on the initial response. It's those federal dollars flowing from FEMA down to people to restore their properties, that sort of thing that's been lost. So I don't want to get mixed up in these clarifications in trying to respond to a specific situation. So, Madam Chair, I guess what I needed to make a statement, and I would hope that we will be hearing from county representation about the structure and the appropriate chain of command. I think it's very important that within any given county, cities' communication with their county folks and clearly knowing where to find somebody and how to find the appropriate person in the chain of command is critical in that initial emergency response to whatever may be happening, so that we can respond to our local communities as quickly and correctly as possible.
Association of Oregon Counties is here, and they'll be testifying next. So next we have Senator Johnson.
I have two comments. In response to my good colleague, Representative Nelson's remarks, respectfully, I would say what the intention of this bill is to lessen bureaucracy, not add to bureaucracy. So I'm not sure that I see that there's a role for the legislature. And the other thing, I just feel compelled to correct the record. It was Governor Kulongowski's office acting very expeditiously to get a disaster declaration going that allowed much of Tillamook County to access other assets, federal assets and state assets. I know that because I was in constant contact with our county commissioners on our emergency management, as Representative Boone was, so I just simply can't let the record reflect that the governor was not actively involved in the emergency in Tillamook County. He was, and it was his actions that helped us get much of the access to assets we needed.
Thank you. Representative Shuffler.
Yeah, it's somewhat along those lines. I was a city councilor in a very small town. It's up right next to Portland, so we wouldn't be cut off ever, like Gold Beach or Scappoose could potentially be with Tillamook. But if we do, and I agree with Senator Johnson and her concerns about small communities being available to have this line of communication as well, because they could be find themselves in a position to be cut off. But that being said, the only reason I got elected city council is because I work harder than the other guy. I wouldn't have any more qualifications other than that. So I would hope that the men and women who do serve so diligently at smaller local governments would be very plainly, clearly spelled out to them that just because they may think it's a disaster of a certain degree, it would still have to meet a certain criteria to qualify for this declaration to be made, so that we don't have this confusion about, well, I requested a declaration, it wasn't given to me, so therefore they don't care and they're not actively involved. With the governor, for example. That's just so people know what they're going to get if they request something and what they aren't going to get if it doesn't meet that level, that degree, whatever that might be, because I want to avoid this kind of confusion if I can. Please, yep. Thank you.
May I respond to something, Representative Cohen? During this emergency we had, we worked with the county all day. They were right by our side continuously. In fact, we opened up this emergency communication center, which we've never opened before in anyone's memory, and we haven't opened it since, to get this thing coordinated. It's the sheriff and his people were all there. It's the county commissioner who wasn't there, and the county commissioner or the mayor don't have a role in these particular instances, unless it's really loss of life is threatened or something. We just brief them on the side and let them know what was going on, but we work very closely with the county and every city, I'm certain does, because we just don't have the resources. And in fact, in this instance, many of our sister cities donated equipment, pumps and the like, to help us get some of the water out of the underpasses. So we work coordinated as much as we can at the local level.
Madam Chair. Good. I'm very relieved to hear that because that's my experience with emergency response, is that mutual aid, and we've even had some bills addressing mutual aid and the kinds of things that, you know, you need to do at the local level with whomever you need to work with to get it addressed. With that level of communication, I'm a little mystified as to why you had difficulty processing a disaster declaration request if the property damage was such that it would have met that threshold. So I heard you say early in your testimony that you were going to work with the counties on clarifying some chain of command. Maybe Lincoln County is just much advanced from some of the other areas, but I really doubt that. But we have a very clearly delineated chain of command, and there's always someone in that command structure available throughout an emergency. So it may be just clarification. I don't know, but I'd like to work through those things very carefully before we draft legislation that may not be the most appropriate direction to go.
Thank you. Senator Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to kind of go back to the core of the bill, which is giving a different process here. I want to call your attention to two cities in my district that I believe would have some difficulties. That would be Reedsport, far away from the county, located in the county seat located in Roseburg, and Florence, with the county seat located in Eugene. The way it is now, the city has an emergency. The first responders respond. When they can no longer handle it, they turn to the county. When the county can no longer handle it, they turn to the state. This bill, as I see it, would go around that process and would go then to OEM and the governor to declare that because of difficulties. And then it also talks about, or these gentlemen talked about, a line of command. It would seem to me that this is a local situation that needs to be worked out between the cities and the counties, particularly those cities that I've just talked about in my district, that need to have something worked out with their counties. And if you have a chain of command, I don't know why we would need to tell a county what their chain of command might be. For instance, the chain of command might be one chain of command in Coos County, and it would not be the chain of command that you would want in your county. So I understand the problem, because I can absolutely see the problem in those areas in Douglas County and in Western Lane County. But at the same time, I just am not sure it requires legislation. So maybe you have to convince me of why you feel like we need to pass a bill that mandates such a thing.
You want to answer that?
Madam Chair, Senator, I think what I'm getting from this is not all counties are the same. Not all counties have things in place. Not all counties and municipalities have agreements. We may have to approach this on a state level saying, you need to have a plan. You need to have a chain of command. We need to know to go from step 1, 2, 3, and 4 and then go to step 5. I think that's what I'm, because I was surprised, because Medford, we have a chain of command with Jackson County. But evidently not all counties are the same. So, in fact, the more I'm in this building, I understand that not all counties are the same.
Follow-up. I'd like to point out that we have in our package a structure, and it does involve a great deal of what we're talking about as far as counties having a plan. And so I don't know whether we would be redundant or not. Senator George, help me here. We talked a lot about structure and involving cities and counties, and we tried to incorporate that in as much as possible into our legislation. So,
Madam Chair, do you want me to answer that real quickly?
Go right ahead.
I always approve. I always think a plan B is a good idea, and that's my idea here. Once you've gone through the chain of structure out of command, there should be an immediate response by the city to get approval to move. Because, you know, when we talk about the catastrophic events, we're talking about when everything goes to pieces, what do you do? To give some flexibility here for the city to appeal, to me, seems reasonable. I think they're going to work with the county. I know they will. But just in case.
Madam Chair, Senator George, that's what we were talking about, these amendments, because we hashed this thing out and thought, really, what we need here is a structure. That's what we need, is a structure, a good, adequate structure to have a contingency backup plan in case, example, you couldn't get a hold of the county commissioner.
And we still have yet to hear from the counties. And I wanted to say also that Oregon Emergency Management was going to try to be here for the bills, but he's stuck in Washington, D.C. And I guess that
was that an emergency, ma'am?
It's an emergency.
Okay.
If there are no more questions for this panel, I'll call up Paul Snyder from AOC.
Thank you very much.
And Mr. Anderson, thank you for driving all the way over and giving up your ski day for us. Thank you.
Ski home.
It's raining. It's
going
to be
entire
way.
Oh, we're sorry.
I was thinking it was snowing.
Come out.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties. And I think the discussion among the members of the committee has, and with the panel that preceded me, has really identified what I think is the nature of the problem, and that is a combination of communication and clear lines of authority. And there is a protocol that I believe is in place that OEM and the counties and others, including cities, have bought into that are based upon certain principles, and the principles are that you deal with a particular form of disaster at the lowest level appropriate to the circumstances, so that if a city has an emergency, the city deals with it. If the city has or believes it will exhaust its resources, then it goes to the county. And then the county goes to Emergency Management Division. If the county, together with others with whom it has mutual aid agreements, determines that it doesn't have the resources to deal adequately with the problem, then the county goes to the state through the Emergency Management Division. And the reasons for that are several. One of them is that you prioritize the preservation of life as the highest priority under the circumstances. So if there's a problem in one area that is superseded by a greater problem in another area, then the geographical jurisdiction that covers both areas has the ability to work the problem through and allocate resources based on what the priority should be. And the other issue, though, is simply to deal with the issues, first exhaust your local resources, or conclude that you will exhaust your local resources before you contact the state or a higher level of government in order to bring their resources to bear on the problem. And there is a statute that deals with at least part of the problem, and this statute may not be clear enough to address the issue that's been described to the committee. And it's ORS 401305 sub 3, and it says, among other things, that if the governing bodies of the city and the county both have emergency management programs, they shall jointly establish policies that provide a number of things, one of which is establish lines of communication, succession, and authority of elected officials for an effective and efficient response to the emergency conditions. And it looks like, for whatever reason, that didn't work out that way in this situation. And perhaps the thing to do in terms of considering amendments might simply be to, as Mr. Anderson suggested, Representative Burley and Representative Esquivel also suggested, that we ought to be sure that the line of succession is identified within the county. Because one of the problems that we'll have is if a city jumps over the county and goes directly to emergency management division, their protocols indicate to them the next step is for them to check with the county and find out if the county has exhausted its resources or believes it will exhaust its resources. So basically one of the problems here is that we don't want to create a solution that creates a greater problem than the one we're trying to solve. And we don't want to create a line of succession that's even longer than it needs to be. So if emergency management is simply going to check back with the county to be sure that the county has exhausted its resources, then we need, I think, to coordinate first between the city and the county. And that was the discussion that we've had with the proponents of the bill, and I'm hopeful that we can just have some amendments that do that.
Rickshaw?
Yeah, you know, I think there's that old common sense, again, that keeps creeping up around here. If I'm a city official and there's a situation right now today and I can't get a hold of my county commissioner, and I know that I can call someone at state level that's accessible, available, and close by, I know what I'm just going to do naturally. And you know, we can have all the protocol in the world, but I can't imagine that right now, if there was a situation, people wouldn't automatically just do that. I think Senator George said it's better to do something and ask for forgiveness than do nothing and try to explain why you didn't do anything. And I think that's, you know, and we like to figure out and see how many angels are dancing on the head of the pin around here. And I think this is a good idea. I do. I'm not saying we shouldn't do this, because we should have that channeled communication. But in the end, I just can't imagine that County Commissioner Cowan would be upset with a city councilor for calling the state because they couldn't get a hold of her in a situation. I'm positive she wouldn't be, because they went out of protocol. So I just want to bring it back down to an old level, common sense level here. And I don't know. That's a comment more than a question.
Respond to that,
you have the gavel at this point.
Well, I think the problem is, and I think he has articulated it very well, that if the city contacts the state, it is their first action will be to contact the county
right. And
find out, because that is the way that it works. I think that it actually could work well, but if you're going to ask Florence to have someone sign something from Eugene with a tsunami coming, it isn't going to work. But what it does say is that when the city can no longer take care of what they're having, and sometimes that the city and the county will happen within 5 minutes. The city talks to the county and they say, they both agree,
of course,
this is huge. And they immediately contact the state, and it's a moot question. But the thing that bothers me is saying in statute that the city can go around the county. Doesn't say if the county fails to respond, if the county can't be reached. It just says the city can go around the county and to the state.
I just don't want anything to interfere with the quick flow of communication. I think that if there is to be something such as a bill like this, it does need to be amended. It does need to be far clearer than it is the way that it's written right now. For me, just being a local government person, I see the LOC person. I also think that the cities and counties should be talking about this. Are you talking about this with the cities since this bill came up?
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Berger, in the hallway.
In the hallway.
And well, I think we're at a point where we can resolve the issue together.
Good, good. Well, I think that that sounds very encouraging because I would by far rather all of you come up with a sensible solution to a problem like Ben faced, like the potential of Reedport and Florence right now, and bring it to us instead of top-down telling you exactly how it's going to be. Representative Cowan.
Madam Chair, thank you. And I too, would like to encourage the cities and counties to just sort of bring back some clarification, perhaps, to this body on the way it really does work. But in reality, I encourage you to separate out the two pieces of emergency response to whatever's going on and mitigation funding that may come back later for what you had to do. Because I've worked through a number of emergent situations, and in reality what's happened is the governor has called me and said, what do you need? I mean, the state knows sometimes quicker than everyone in any jurisdiction knows right. How to get a hold of various people, and the communication very much goes two ways, but nobody is suggesting that if a community is isolated and they need help, that they shouldn't be calling everywhere that they need to call to get that assistance, and that, in fact, is what we do. But at some point, you have to bring some clarity to the process so that everyone knows what has been expended or needs to be covered or whatever. So I think you guys have got this in place. I really do. And I would just appreciate, before we act on this bill, if the cities and counties would bring us back some clarity around the requirements for emergency plans, what emergency plans are in place, and how they're working at this point, because it is detailed in status and in statute, and I know they're there.
Thank you, Representative Cowan. And the other thing is that I think that as counties, you need to know how much needs to be mandated in the structure. Does every county want the same structure within the bill if there's an amendment to that, and how that should work? We have lost our quorum. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2624. And with no other business to come before the body, I'll cause the meeting adjourned.